Take an ordinary putty knife and scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay. Tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Chalk Talk is your weekly home for football news on Penguin Radio.
Whack and yay! Whack and yay!
We will take an in-depth look at some of the biggest news and notes from around the football world so you can stay up to date on some of the biggest stories and headlines. It doesn't matter if they are lining up on Sundays at Lambeau.
It's free play. Rodgers has made a living of this. Takes a shot downfield. And James Jones and Rodgers have done it again.
Or if they're on campus inside of the big house.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Chalk Talk has it all. And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Let's head into the studio and join your host, Jeff Sefford.
Off and running on another edition of Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm Jeff Sefford, your host. We got a great show lined up for you this afternoon. Chalk Talk, everything football. A lot of big day in college and the NFL with head coach firings. The trade deadline in the NFL was this afternoon, 1 p.m., 4 p.m. Eastern time was the trade deadline. Just one notable trade to make note of. There was a few other ones that were possibly in the works, one involving left tackle Joe Thomas, but nothing came to fruition. And Colin Kaepernick in the news with the San Francisco 49ers. Joseph Randall from the Dallas Cowboys in the news as well. And other talkouts from the NFL. And going on right now on the college football side of things, we have the first college football playoff rankings coming out. The selection show is actually going on right now on ESPN, and they are announcing this is the first list of top 25 teams from the playoff committee. So thank goodness we're finally getting away from the AP rankings, and heck, you could spend a whole show just talking about the AP rankings and how they're flawed, how they shouldn't be paid attention to, and how they grandstand large opponents and all of these big issues. But we're not going to spend an hour talking about the AP rankings, especially when we don't have to worry about them anymore. So that will be part of the playoff rankings will be part of our segment. Hopefully we will be able to get word from social media and other things to find out who the playoff teams are going to be, and when we know who the playoff or the where the playoff teams are as of right now, and then when we get those top four teams, we can discuss where they are and, you know, talk about who has the fast track to the playoff. And this is another huge week in college football, the classic Bama LSU matchup coming up on Saturday, and undefeated Oklahoma State taking on TCU in Stillwater on Saturday as well. And some crazy finishes from Saturday involving officiating. And we're going to talk about some issues with officiating with the replay booth in college football as well in our college football segment. All right, so that's going to be our show for this afternoon. We're going to go back and start with the NFL. Some of the big news coming out this afternoon, probably the biggest headline we saw was head coach of the Tennessee Titans, Ken Whisenhunt, was fired today from his position at with the Titans. Mike Mularkey will be taking over for the rest of the season as an interim coach. Mularkey has been a coach in the NFL for a number of years, so a pretty good situation, at least as far as interim basis coaches go. And when you look at what Ken Whisenhunt has done in his last, well, he was the coach last year, and he was the coach through the first 6 or 7 games this season, and his record was 3-20 in that stead, but which is not very good. But it's definitely worth noting that last year definitely was a throwaway season for Tennessee. I mean, they had Zach Mettenberger at quarterback, who has a plexiglass knee that loves to get torn, and he's turnover prone, and he hasn't really shown anything to this point that says that, yeah, he is our guy. You know, he is the guy that's going to take us back to the playoffs where we have been before. Otherwise, they wouldn't have used their number two draft pick on Marcus Mariota. So the Titans knew going in that this was going to be a multi-year process with this team. And so they brought in a guy, Whisenhunt, who's had a lot of experience and a lot of success, took the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner, and is a well-respected coach around the league. And if you asked, you know, and a lot of coaches said this about the Titans, that they are making positive strides towards being successful. And that's why I don't understand why the Titans would fire Ken Whisenhunt at this point, because there's nothing really that has been shown to this point that would merit a firing. He hasn't been able to really put his print on this football team. I mean, last season, he just didn't have the personnel. I mean, your best quarterback who was on the roster, Jake Locker, was out for the season. You know, Zach Mettenberger, young guy, he was injury prone and turnover prone. And then Charlie Winehurst, like, oh my goodness. I mean, if Charlie Winehurst is in a quarterback conversation at this point in his career, I mean, your franchise has problems at that position. It's plain and simple. So it's not. And I just look at the team and just think that they just didn't have the personnel in-house to be able to be successful. And, you know, in this year, you bring in the brand new quarterback, Marcus Mariota, a rookie quarterback that has a lot of adjustments to make to the NFL game and has looked pretty good. I mean, he had a great week one against Tampa, and they were competitive in a lot of games as well that Marcus Mariota was a quarterback. Let's not remember that Marcus Mariota has only played in 5 games this season, and he's, you know, and like I said, he is a rookie quarterback. I found this an interesting statistic. When he was at Oregon, where he played for the last 3 years and won the Heisman Trophy and became a superstar in college football, he only was under center for 5 snaps in his entire career at Oregon. And, you know, you think Oregon is the spread, it's that blur offense that just moves extremely fast. And the NFL game, you know, Marcus Mariota, sure, he can take a lot of snaps from in the shotgun where he was used to, but there are a lot of times where he's going to be asked to go under center, and that's something to adjust to in the NFL game. And, you know, and not only that, just adjusting to the different types of athletes and, you know, the speed and everything about it. So there's just so many things to look at with what Marcus Mariota was going through that could attribute to a slow start to a season. And does that fall all on Ken Whisenhunt's shoulders? Heck no, it doesn't, in my opinion. I mean, because all this is really going to do is you're really pressing the reset button in a way. Even with Marcus Mariota, because now Marcus Mariota, who's been in the league for a year, will probably have to learn a whole new system. He'll have to, you know, they'll probably have to get some different players. Who knows? Maybe they'll switched up the defensive scheme. You know, that's always a little bit of a tough team, or if a team goes from a 4-3 to a 3-4 or vice versa, that's always something that you have to deal with. And to me, that's just prolonging the rebuilding process if you're not going to establish something. You know, you look at all of these franchises that have been successful over, you know, the last 10 years. You look at New England Patriots. What do they have? Stability. They have Robert Kraft. They have Bill Belichick. You know, and obviously not every franchise can be the Patriots. But, I mean, you look at Pittsburgh with Mike Tomlin. He's been in there for close to 10 years. Mike McCarthy from Green Bay Packers. He's been there for 9 years. I mean, and the list just goes on down. And, you know, there's been coaches that have been on the hot seat multiple times. I mean, look at Tom Coughlin. How many times has he been on the hot list and not been fired? Or Marvin Lewis. Like, I'm sure there's some nights where he thinks, wow, how have I survived this long? But the fact of the matter is that if you've been successful doing something, then you should stick with it. And if you're trying to build something that is successful, you should find an identity for yourself and just build that and go on that. And with firing a guy after a year and a couple of games, how are you going to build anything? You're not going to be able to build anything. And, you know, I just do not agree with this move whatsoever. And obviously I wish the Titans the best and Ken Whisenhunt the best. I would not be a bit surprised to see him coaching in the NFL again very soon. And other news happening today, the NFL trade deadline passed this afternoon. Like I mentioned in the opening, it was 1 o'clock out here on the West Coast, 4 p.m. Eastern time. And it's not something that's... The trade deadline is not... It's a little bit unlike other sports like baseball or basketball where it's a huge thing, you know, wheeling and dealing. It's, you know, star players moving all over the place. For whatever reason, the NFL is just not quite like that. But there was one big move, one big splash move. It involved the San Francisco 49ers, and it involved their tight end, or should say former tight end, Vernon Davis. He was traded from the 49ers to the Denver Broncos for a 6th-round pick and a 7th-round selection, so that Denver Broncos maybe were missing that down-the-field tight end target that they had last year with Julius Thomas, and Vernon Davis absolutely fits the bill. I mean, he has been one of the best receiving tight ends in the NFL for this being his 10th season, and, you know, he's a veteran guy. He might not be a spring chicken like he used to be, but you think about a guy like this, and I heard Brian Dawkins talking about this today on NFL Live, and he's talking about, you know, this will be a shot in the arm for a guy like this who's a veteran player that understands he doesn't have 10 more years in the NFL, you know, and he gets thrown into a situation where now he's on a team that can win the Super Bowl, you know, and, you know, so heck, he's gonna turn it up and play as hard as he can. And, you know, physically, he is healthy. There shouldn't be anything wrong with him in that regard. And his success or lack thereof with the 49ers, getting back to last year and this season as well, really shouldn't be blamed on him. And it's problems in the locker room, possibly, and just a sucky offense in general, to just kind of put it bluntly, for the 49ers. So, you know, obviously Peyton Manning will be a better option at quarterback than Colin Kaepernick or whoever is under center for the San Francisco 49ers in the future. And this move for the Denver Broncos, I think, might be extremely dangerous, because the Broncos do have other serviceable tight ends and guys that can block. So Vernon Davis can line up in the slot and play a lot like Julius Thomas did last year. And maybe this will give Denver just that next element to their offense. And Gary Kubiak has always been their head coach, has been a guy that's taken advantage of tight ends. He did it well with Houston and did it well with Joe Flacco last year as well. So just another wrinkle in that offense. And the running game looked really good last week against Green Bay. They're pretty much their best offensive game to date overall for Denver on Sunday night. And I think it had a lot of people in the NFL sweating it out. I mean, this team, they really look fantastic. And now with this move of Vernon Davis, you know, making an offense stable again with a defense that's absolutely dominant. I mean, and they showed that on Sunday when they absolutely took it to the Green Bay Packers, a team coming in with a lot of confidence and an undefeated record. And were favored by a lot of people to win. You know, this really, I think, turned a lot of heads and showed that Denver could absolutely be the favorite in the AFC if their offense is clicking and playing well and their defense is playing as well as it is. Man, I even think Tom Brady would have trouble with that team. And, you know, they'll definitely be a team to keep your eye on and see if Peyton Manning in possibly his last season can make another run at the Super Bowl. And to talk about the team that Vernon Davis, I don't know why I'm having so much trouble with his name. It's pretty straightforward. But anyway, the team that Vernon Davis left, the San Francisco 49ers, have also made another move today as starter Colin Kaepernick is going to be benched this week. And Blaine Gabbert will be getting the start on Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons. And it is at Levi's Stadium, that game, which will help things a little bit for the 49ers. But man, you look at what the 49ers have done on offense, and you do have to understand on one end to bench Kaepernick. I mean, you have to do something. You know, I mean, their offense has just been so stagnant and hasn't been able to get much of anything done. But how much of the blame this season should be on Colin Kaepernick's shoulders? And you look, I don't think you can. You definitely can't put all of the blame on Kaepernick. Just looking at the players that have left the team, not just on the defensive side, but on the offensive line as well. You know, you think of when Kaepernick and the 49ers were playing successfully, and when they made it to the NFC title game 2 years ago, their mentality and just their style of play completely changed. Their team was a team that would hit you in the mouth running the football. They were tough. You know, they would never score a whole lot of points, but they would be able to be efficient enough and make enough big plays on offense to play with anybody. And their defense, you know, played with that same intensity and fire. And I can understand how the defense isn't the same when you lose guys like Patrick Willis and Borland and Dante Whitner. That stuff's just going to catch up with you. And, you know, the offense should be the same thing. The offense kind of lost their spark, lost, you know, and you look at the guy, all the injuries they have in the backfield as well. Reggie Bush out for the year. You know, Carlos Hyde, he was injured. Looks to be out again for this week. They did bring in another running back that was a free agent. I'm trying to think. Oh, geez. Pierre Thomas. There we go. They did bring in Pierre Thomas, who was a free agent, to fill the stead and at running back. But that's not a legitimate NFL weapon. He's not a guy that's going to come in and change your offense and be a game changer. And Anquan Boldin is out. And it has been out for San Francisco as well. So you, just looking at what Colin Kaepernick's had to deal with, and you just got to think, like, well, what the heck else is he going to do? You know, and I mean, you saw the game on Sunday. Every time they tried to run the ball or run play action, or when they were running the ball, they were getting tackled in the end zone for a safety. And when they'd try to run play action, Colin Kaepernick was running for his life all afternoon. So it's just kind of there has to be some blame put on Kaepernick. He is not a perfect NFL quarterback. I will say that. But to say this is all Kaepernick's fault, I wouldn't agree with that for 1 second. And, you know, it's just something that the Niners are going to have to deal with. And, you know, and oh, how the mighty have fallen when you look at the San Francisco 49ers. Okay, we are up against it. We are going to head to our first break of the evening. We are listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. And during the break, we're going to do some research and see if the college football playoff teams have been released from the new rankings that are just coming out. And they are on the air talking about it right now on ESPN. And if they are, we're going to talk about that and just some instant reaction to what the rankings are for this week. So you're listening to Chalk Talk. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We just wrapped up our NFL talk segment for the week. One thing I kind of left out of the segment, I'm just remembering, is that Joseph Randall, running back for the Dallas Cowboys, was released today by the Cowboys. Kind of a interesting move, but we had seen some problems with him in the locker room with the Cowboys and kind of some off-the-field stuff with him, so shouldn't come at that much of a shock, especially with the surprising performance from Darren McFadden this season as well, as he's kind of turned into a running back that, or to this point, has been a pretty good option for them in the backfield, and you definitely can't blame their lack of success this season on that. It'll all hinge on Tony Romo returning for Dallas. So I promised at the beginning of the show and before we went to break that if we could find the college football rankings somewhere that we would tell them to you and tell you about them, and by golly, we found them. and they are just announced moments ago on ESPN, the official national championship college football top 10 playoff presented by AT&T. Let's go through the rankings, shall we? And we'll react to them accordingly after I list the rankings. I'm going to go through the top 10. Number one, Death Valley, Clemson Tigers. Two Tigers, one and two. Number two, the LSU, Louisiana State Tigers are number two. Number three, the Ohio Buckeyes, Ohio State, coming in at number three. They've been ranked number one in the AP poll for the entirety of this season. Come in at number three in the playoff rankings. Number four, and the last spot to this point. Now, we have a lot of football to be played, so if you're a fan of any of these other teams that are in the mix, don't start throwing furniture and getting angry just yet. But the number four team is the Alabama Crimson Tide. So I don't really see many surprises in the top four, but we'll list the rest of the top 10, and these are teams that are definitely in the mix as well. Number five, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, as they come off a big win against Temple this week, and a win that was probably a lot harder than other people thought. Really, nobody gave Temple a shot in heck, and that surprised me a little bit. And when I was picking my picks last week, I picked Notre Dame to win, but I thought Temple was going to be able to hang around just because, you know, high emotion game, and so much of the college game is being able to play with emotion and fire in your belly. And Temple was able to hang around and really challenge Notre Dame, but Notre Dame did a good job being able to pick up a win on the road, so they stay in the hunt for the playoff. Coming in at number six, the Baylor Bears, undefeated Baylor Bears. They, with their high-powered offense, it's definitely going to have to be an interesting thing to see is how they will do without Russell, their starting quarterback, who is injured and will be out for the rest of the year. I mean, obviously, a lot of people think with offenses like a Baylor, like an Oregon, that it's kind of like a plug-and-play type system, but with Oregon's early struggles this year without Vernon Adams, I don't think you can really make that argument. I mean, that's why Oregon isn't sitting in the playoff chase right now, is because they didn't have anybody that could throw the ball. And so hopefully not, if you're a Baylor fan, that they will be able to keep the offense rolling with the backup quarterback in there. And number seven, who undefeated Michigan State, another team from the Big Ten, as they have had their fair share of success. They had a big early win against Oregon in the early parts of the year, and then had that crazy win a couple weeks ago up in the Big House on that last play of the game where it ran a punt back to the house in the Big House. So they sit at number seven. They haven't up instead of the other than those two games, Michigan State hasn't played the toughest schedule and has squeaked by a couple of mediocre teams. You know, just snuck by Purdue, just snuck by Michigan State, Rutgers. So that's part of the reason why they are where they are in the playoff rankings. Coming in at and all the way down at number eight, TCU, the TCU Horned Frogs, led by Trevon Boykin in that passing attack. This seems a little bit low, but maybe not. And you look number nine, the Iowa Hawkeyes, and rounding out the number 10 at the number 10 spot, the Florida Gators. So you look at this top 10, and the one thing to me that stands out right away is how low TCU is. You know, you saw them as a national title contender at the beginning of the year, and you think number 8, whoa, that's way down there. You know, they got to leapfrog four teams to get into the top 4, but you know, you look at the teams that are in front of them, and I don't have a problem with TCU being behind any of them. You know, Notre Dame's strength of schedule is outstanding. Their only loss is to number one, Clemson, Alabama. You know, they play in the SEC, great schedule. Ohio State, you know, they're up where they are because they're the defending champions. And to me, I think that's where they should be. When you think of a defending champ, you know, they're the guys that everybody has to beat. And until somebody beats Ohio State, I would put them in the conversation. I mean, if you're the defending champ, you know, you are the champ. So until somebody beats the champ, then there can't be a new champ, right? And the LSU Tigers, you look at what they've done with Fournette and everything else, and TCU, they haven't been perfect this season. They had one really crazy win up at Texas Tech about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I remember if there was it was a crazy play at the end of the game where the ball was deflected in the air and one of the TCU players ended up catching it on a fourth down, you know, kind of a desperation type of play. It ended up working out for them. So, you know, and their defense has not been a stereotypical Gary Patterson defense that we've seen in years past. So there's kind of a few little chinks in the armor of the Horned Frogs, but they can do a lot of help from themselves in the Big 12 and in the rankings as well, as they have some big games coming down the stretch. They start right out of the chute this week against number 12, Oklahoma State, playing in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And that should be a tough game for really both of those teams. I mean, both of these teams are set up a little bit differently, with TCU being an air-it-out offensive team where they're throwing the ball over the field. They don't run the ball all that much. And it's all predicated on Trevon Boykin, where Oklahoma State is a little bit more of a defensive team, and we're one of the top-rated defenses in the Big 12, and you know, it's kind of hard to believe if you watched Oklahoma State play against Texas Tech on Saturday up in Lubbock. But I mean, for the majority of the other part of the season, this defense has been pretty good, and the offense has definitely a little bit more balance than TCU does, and they do play a two-quarterback system in Oklahoma State as well. They have one quarterback who's more of a runner with Rudolph, and they have one quarterback who is more of a passer in Walsh. So it's two guys, two a little bit different skill sets, and I think Mike Gundy does a really good job of mixing these two guys in. They let both the guys help the team in their own way, and it doesn't ruin the flow of the game. That's the part that I think makes Oklahoma State so impressive on offense, and a lot of it's got to be the coaching, is because, you know, when you think of two quarterback systems that have been working, you know, the first one that comes to mind is Ohio State, where it's been kind of a mess with Cardale Jones and JT Barrett just kind of stepping on each other's feet a little bit. These two guys understand their roles on the team, and they just go out and execute, and they run their offense the way they're supposed to run it. And I think that that's a really great way to, you know, if you can make it work, then that's a good way to do it. And Oklahoma State, they are undefeated as well coming into this game, and were come in just outside the top 10 in the playoff rankings. And they're another team, if they can, with a very backloaded schedule, they have a game against Oklahoma coming up after this in the Bedlam game, TCU on Saturday, and also Baylor at home. So if Oklahoma State, you know, the ball is in their court, if they can win these big games and finish the year undefeated, they would absolutely be a candidate for the college football playoff. And I imagine one of these group of Big 12 teams will end up in the playoff when it's all said and done, whether it's TCU, Baylor, or Oklahoma State. Those are the three teams I'm looking at right now. Oklahoma may be able to get into the mix as well. They are kind of out of it at this point with the one loss to Texas, but if they are able to pick up a big win against Oklahoma State or another quality opponent in the Big 12, they would be able to maybe get back into the conversation. So this is going to be a very interesting Big 12 race to watch, and it's interesting how backloaded the Big 12 schedule is, and if they did it partially on purpose, heck, it's smart on their part, and it's good for the fans as well. I mean, this is when you want to start seeing these big games, you know, when you think LSU and Alabama, you know, the number 2 versus number 4, you want these big games late in the year in November. You know, you want these games to be playing when all the cards and the chips are on the table. And, you know, there's a lot of games to be played, a lot of, you know, teams to rise and fall. And by no means are these rankings the, you know, the all-end-all rankings. I mean, even look at even the number one team. They have quite the test this week as they are facing the never 17-ranked Florida State Seminoles, who would also be right in there in possibly getting a ranking if it wasn't for that crazy play last week where Georgia Tech ran a blocked field goal for a touchdown on the last play of the game. But if there's another team, if Florida State could pick up a win this week against number one ranked Clemson, you would think that that would catapult them close to the top 10 and possibly as an ACC champion could possibly get into the mix. So there's so many variables to bring up. We didn't even bring up the Pac-12, and that's the thing. That's an interesting thing, is there are zero, something I should mention is that there are zero Pac-12 teams in this top 10. The closest team to the top 10 is the Stanford Cardinal. The Utah Utes are also in the top 25 as well. But those are the only two Pac-12 teams that are in the mix at this point. UCLA is in the top 25, so there are three teams in the college playoff top 25. Pardon me for that little slip up there, but still, you know, you look at that conference, it was a conference that was looked at to seed as a power, and they haven't done that. But there's still a lot of games to be played in that conference as well. So it's going to be an interesting ride for the end of the season, and I'm excited. Bring it on. And one interesting headline to just make note of from one of the playoff teams is that JT Barrett will not be suiting up this week for the Buckeyes, as he will be suspended one game for a DUI, driving under the influence. I believe in Ohio they call it driving while operating a motor vehicle, or they don't call it just a DUI, but it's the same punishment, the same thing. It's just different wording. And Urban Meyer suspended him, and he will also lose some financial aid for the summer term as well. I found that to be kind of interesting. But, I mean, just not a smart move from Barrett, and coming from a guy who, to this point, has been pretty clean, pretty clean cut and hadn't had any problems with the media or off the field, just kind of coming out of left field a little bit. But, you know, and that's something I always never understand is just with life in general, is just why drive drunk? Like, it just doesn't make any sense, especially when you're JT Barrett. Like, I'm sure if you're in Columbus, Ohio, you could call up an Uber driver and just be like, hey, this is JT Barrett, can you come get me? And I bet you he could find an Uber driver that would drive him home for free. And I mean, maybe the NCAA would come after him for that. But, I mean, he's JT Barrett. I mean, he's a local celebrity. Like, and I'm sure that the football team has, and the university itself as well, has Safe Ride. I know here at Dominican, we have Safe Ride. And schools I've been at the past, the Safe Ride service, that all you have to do is be a student on campus, and you call this service. It's a student-run, you know, and student-sponsored service where you call them up and you say, hey, I'm at, you know, let's say, if you're living here in San Rafael, I'm at the corner of Anderson Drive and A Street, you know, right in downtown. You know, I was just at the bar with my buddies. I had a few extra than what I thought I was going to. I can't drive home. Can you come pick me up? Easy as that. You know, done. That's all you have to do. And there's just no excuse to be in your car driving drunk. I mean, it's not even going to be any less, you know, it's not even going to be any less, what's the word? It's not even going to be any harder for Barrett to do that. I mean, he's just going to get dropped off home, just be the same if he would have drove home. So, I mean, I guess there's my there's my rant for the day with driving drunk. But just an interesting thing. And man, we had some just to kind of backtrack here a little bit with college football, we had a crazy week last week, a couple of really crazy games. I mean, I feel like I'm a little bit of a broken record here at this point with college football saying, oh, what a crazy game, because every week there's just been crazy finish after crazy finish, and this week, really, we had two with the first, and both of them involving, this part of the reason why I'm bringing this up is both of these games involved controversial plays with the replay booth, one being, in my eyes at least, being much more controversial than the other. Well, let's start with the lighter one, the incredible game on Thursday night between the Ducks and Oregon Ducks and the Arizona State Sun Devils, with the went to a triple overtime. There's crazy plays happening on both sides of the ball. I mean, over 1,000 yards of offense on both sides. Arizona State had over 700 yards of total offense in that game. I mean, it was just a track meet, and so many crazy plays. And I mean, Vernon Adams, make quarterback for Oregon, throwing one up, a desperation heave on a fourth down late in the fourth quarter to tie the game, and just everything that led up to the overtimes was just incredible football. But the one play that was in question, and the play that gave Oregon the win, was a touchdown pass in the back of the end zone that was extremely close, and it was called a touchdown on the field, but it was extremely close, and not having the foot down in bounds in the back of the end zone. And there was, you know, a lot of controversy about it, and folks in Arizona were not happy about the call. The fans in Arizona almost immediately, when they saw the replay, started, you know, waving their hands, incomplete. And, you know, you'd think that that's going to be part of the spiel for an Arizona State fan anyway. You know, I mean, even when the call is dead right, you know, against their team, you know, the fans are going to boo no matter what. But for them to react as strongly as they did, you could tell that they obviously thought, like, oh, this is incomplete, you know. But, I mean, and it was a very close play. But in this case, I felt that the officials got the play right, where that it was indisputable evidence. And I think that's the thing that people should focus on most with this one, is that, you know, I don't think you could make a distinction if he was out of bounds or not on the play. And so in this case, even though there was some controversy about it, I believe they got the call right from what they called on the field. If they would have called the play incomplete, then it would be vice versa, the same situation, except that different outcome. If they would have called it incomplete on the field, then I would have expected them to review it and call it incomplete, you know, because there wasn't sufficient evidence to show that Braylon Addison, who was a receiver, had brought it in bounds. But it was just a fantastic game to watch on both sides. And oddly enough, the game ended on an interception. You know, finally somebody makes a defensive play, and the Ducks came out of there with a win and a crazy another. And this game was more crazy. It was between the Duke Blue Devils and the Miami Hurricanes. Hurricanes coming off a terrible week, a terrible loss to Clemson, lost their head coach, go into Durham, North Carolina, and they win on a play that looked something out of Cal versus Stanford. You know, the only thing that was missing with the play was the band on the field and the confusion that happened after it. The big difference, however, to the band play and this play was that the officials had the luxury of being able to review and go look at this play. And this was the play, to me, that was the play that should raise some eyebrows and people should make people worry. Because make no doubt about it, the officials for this game blew the calls for that final play, where Miami returned a kickoff for a touchdown and involved, I believe, that it was 8 laterals. You know, just one of those plays, you know, they schoolyard, you know, let's practice schoolyard stuff, you know? You know, you see that. Remember, there's a scene in the movie The Longest Yard where they're throwing the ball around, and, you know, we've seen that fantasy played out before, but you don't really ever see it in real life, and it actually happened, but did it really? And there's a lot of, you know, good arguments that could be made that says that the play never should have counted. First of all, there was, on one of the laterals, one of the players looked to be clearly down on the play, and the most interesting part about it was that it was the final lateral that really set up the last run down the field, where the last, they lateral it, and at one point they had guy running down the field with two or three guys in front of him, and that was it. That was a touchdown at that point. And, you know, so they had that, and they also missed some deliberate illegal block in the back calls as well that were, I guess you could say, flags were not left on the field for that. And, you know, and if you're, and understand you can't go back and call a illegal block in the back from a review, but you can clearly see that a player was down and the officials just missed it. And to me, that's excusable. It's inexcusable that if you're going to have review, then you should get it right, especially when you got a play like this that could make or break a season. You look at Duke and where they were. They are coming into that game with only one loss, had hopes to, you know, ACC title hopes, you know, maybe even, you know, playoff hopes. I mean, it was a little bit of a stretch, but with only the one loss and probably end up playing a team like Clemson in the ACC title game, you would think that the playoffs could be, I mean, it's a serious stretch, but Duke had a lot to play for, you know, and for them to get just kind of, you know, to have a win taken away from them because the officials blew some calls, that's just extremely frustrating. And I understand that the ACC did take actions and suspend the officials, but to me, that's not enough. If I were the ACC, I would give the win to Duke because the mistakes that were made in that game warrant that. I mean, it's not a matter of, like with Oregon, where it's a really close judgment call where, you know, it's up in the air and could have gone either way. This was pretty darn concrete that, you know, they missed illegal block in the back. They should have been marked down by contact and they weren't. I mean, that's, you know, that's just a big mess and just is not something that the NCAA would want to deal with at this point. But we're past that now, and college football, we got a big week coming up. We talked about Oklahoma State and TCU. We got Clemson and Florida State matching up, and the big one, Alabama versus LSU down in Tuscaloosa. This one should be a war, and it's one of those games that you're not really sure what to expect entirely. It's, you know, just two heavyweights going at it. I mean, the thing I look at with LSU is how else are they going to be able to get production from guys not named Leonard Fournette? You know, is it going to be the passing game? Are they going to, Les Miles likes to run trick plays. We've seen him run fake field goals, fake punts. You name it, he's done it. You know, is it going to be something like that to give LSU a spark? Is it going to be a special teams touchdown, defensive touchdown? You know, so where is the production going to come from that isn't number seven? Because you know that Nick Saban and that defense is going to be darn ready for Leonard Fournette. They've, make no mistake about it, I mean, he's an impossible guy not to focus on. I mean, he's just been that dominant. I mean, when you think about the numbers he's been putting up and put him in the same category as Barry Sanders, for crying out loud, I mean, obviously he's doing some great stuff. So that's going to be just an interesting matchup to watch. And for LSU to win this game, I mean, they should absolutely give the ball to Leonard Fournette. Don't get me wrong. I don't think they should give him five carries, but you know, but I don't think that they should. It should just be Leonard Fournette versus the Crimson Tide. It's got to be a team effort, especially on the road against Alabama. Especially when you look at Alabama, and if they lose again, they're pretty much out of it for the playoff chase as well. So, just a vital game for both sides, and should be definitely a fun one to watch. Vern Lundquist on the call on CBS for that one at 5 o'clock. All right, we're going to head to another break. When we come back, we're going to wrap the show up. We're going to make some picks in the NFL and in college football. So when we come back, we're going to do that. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Stay with us.
In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The
only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped. Childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We just got a few minutes left in our program for the evening. Coming up next after me is Uncovered with DJ Soundwave. She'll be with you from 5 to 6 p.m. and she'll be sharing some music from around the YouTube cover artist world with you guys, so make sure you stay tuned for that. And to wrap up our show for this afternoon, we're going to make some picks in the NFL game and in college football. I did pretty decent with my picks last week. I got the Bronco pick right, got the Ducks pick right last week. The only one I really missed on was the Washington State-Stanford pick, and Stanford had a kick to win it at the end, and man, I really was pulling for the Cougs in that one. I thought just they had been through so much with their program, haven't won a bowl game since 2003. I thought, man, what a cool win this would be up in the Palouse, but not to be, unfortunately, for them. All right, so let's start with... go right with that and start with some college football picks. Let's go right to the big one. Alabama-LSU, Saturday night, 5 o'clock, number 2 versus number 4. How much better does it get than that? And you look at these two teams and what they have done this season. Alabama, you know, bouncing back from that tough loss they had in the beginning of the year against Ole Miss and kind of getting back on track and been playing more like Alabama. And for that reason, I'm going to take the Crimson Tide at home against the Tigers this week, even though the Tigers are the higher-ranked team coming in. I just think that Alabama is a little bit more of a complete team, especially on offense. They have better quarterback play. Henry has been fantastic running the football this year as well. So, and the defense, I think, with Nick Saban, who is one of the best coaches in all of college football and is a great defensive mind, I think he will have those guys ready to go on Saturday against the Tigers. So I'm going to take the Crimson Tide to make a huge statement in the SEC. Another big game to look at, TCU and Oklahoma State, number 8 versus number 14 in the country. And this game coming from Stillwater, Texas. And this is, to me, another game where you're looking at a team that just to me is a little bit more complete at this time. And to me, that team is the Oklahoma State Cowboys. And they're playing at home as well, so they'll be able to get some home cooking going for that as well. So I'm going to take the Cowboys, have a balanced attack, passing the ball well and running the football and doing just enough defensively. Maybe can turn up the pass rush and get into Von Boykin's face and not allow him to escape the pocket. And, I mean, they're not going to have to hold him to 17. I'm sure Oklahoma State will be able to score plenty of points. It's just being able to make some big plays down the stretch, maybe a couple turnovers or whatever the case may be. And the last game I'm going to take a look at, the Florida State Seminoles taking on the Clemson Tigers. And this is a very interesting game. Deshaun Watson and the Tigers have been playing as good as just about anybody this year. Had that big win a couple weeks ago against Notre Dame that kind of set them up to go on this roll that they've been on since then. And I don't see them stopping anytime soon. They're playing at home, Death Valley. Good luck with that, Florida State. And, you know, we don't know whatever Golson's status is going to be for this game. He was out last week due to injury, and they were dealing some injuries with their skill players as well. So I expect the Clemson Tigers to be able to come out with a win this week. And looking at some NFL games, Packers and Panthers matching up in Charlotte. Panthers undefeated. The Packers picked up their first loss on Sunday to Denver. And I think the Packers will be able to get back on track this week and will be able to defeat the Carolina Panthers, because the offense just cannot have two really awful weeks in a row. I just don't see that happening. I see Aaron Rodgers and the offense getting back on track. Maybe see Eddie Lacy get a little bit more involved. I like Green Bay on the road. Another big game, the Broncos and the Colts, the two horses taking on each other down in Indianapolis. And this is a huge game for Indianapolis. Don't make the mistake. They definitely don't want to drop to 3-6 in overall. And Denver looks to stay undefeated. And problems that Colts have had, I don't think they're going to have enough. I think Denver goes on the road and stays undefeated against the Colts. And all right, we are out of time here, unfortunately. I would love to sit here and talk for 3 hours, but fortunately we can't do that. We like to thank everybody who listened in and watched live on ustream.tv. Thank everybody for tuning in, and stay tuned for Uncovered with DJ Soundwave. That's coming up in just a few minutes. So this is Jeff Safford signing off. Join us next week here on Chalk Talk, here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Have a great night, everybody. The neon light.